I have no interest in ever taking someone's last name. I want to be Maddie Drosbeck until the day I die, because that's who I am. I don't want to be someone else. I want to be me. I don't want to be someone's wife. I want to be Maddie Drosbeck. Well, how come he never thought of taking my last name? You don't want to be a Drosbeck? Boo, loser. I think that at this point, we should be in a habit of questioning traditions. And if the reason why we're doing something is just because it's tradition, I don't think that's a good enough reason to do something.
Dude, where are you? Pick up your phone. We're on a song party tonight, and you're obviously invited, so call me back.
Okay, love you.
What's up, you guys, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the weekly summer party for heart-to-hearts and hot gossip, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck. And I have a question for the people. My request, my ask, is that we get a bitch on jury duty. Because why the fuck are the people that they are punking always the nicest people alive? Like, where are the bitches at? I want to see a bitch on my TV. I just don't buy... But also, it would piss me off if the first woman they prank on jury duty was a bitch. I think that would maybe piss me off. I think it pisses me off that they have picked two of the nicest guys on earth to punk like this in jury duty. I don't know how many of you guys watched the most recent jury duty season, but I'm assuming you saw the first one where they were literally doing jury duty. The most recent season of jury duty was actually a company retreat. I watched all of it. Can I just say, I'm not convinced that Anthony didn't know that he was on jury duty. I'm not totally convinced. They can tell me that he didn't know he was on jury duty, but there was just something about those last few episodes that made me feel like he was aware that something was going on. There were a couple times that I was like, he is so aware of the cameras that it just felt weird to me. There's this one shot from a vent when they are spying, like with their ears against the wall, listening to what that company, what the higher ups were saying. If you watch it, you know what I'm talking about. But he's like looking into the vent and there's a camera in there. And I'm like, it must be flashing or something. There must be like a red light. I just felt like he knew that something deeper was going on. Regardless, that's not even my main point here. My main point is that how come both the guys they've pranked on jury duty were the nicest people to ever walk the earth? Where are the bitches? Where are the bitches? I want to see someone get punked on jury duty and be in their confessionals talking smack about the crazy people that are on this show with them. Also, I feel like their approach with company retreat just wasn't realistic, because they made every single person in this company a nut job. Every single person in this, it was like watching The Office. Every single character was insane. There was no normies. And the reality of working in a corporate office job is that there are normies. There are going to be a couple people on the team that are just like old guys that come to work and they do their shit and they leave. I don't care that we're working for Grandma's Rockin' Hot Sauces or whatever the fuck they were called. You're going to have a couple of normies. They didn't have a single normie on that team. That would have been my first red flag, where I'm like, there's just no fucking way. I've had a job before. You know what I mean? Like, I've worked in a corporate office before. I've had crazy jobs before. I've had crazy jobs with crazy coworkers. None of them compared to Rockin' Grandma's fucking hot sauce, because there was no normies. There are so many normies in the world. More people are normcore than not. You expect me to believe that Rockin' Grandma's, this random hot sauce company, managed to employ exclusively main characters? This makes no sense. It makes no logistical sense. The odds were not in their favor. If I was Anthony, that would have thrown it off to me. And you know, I'll be honest, I think I might have been a bitch in the confessionals. If people were moving the way that those people were moving, I can't say that I would have been the nicest person ever. Like, picture this. You start a new job. You go on a company retreat with your new job. And on like day one of the company retreat, one of your coworkers proposes to another one of your coworkers that they are not dating. And it's really awkward and weird and off-putting, and everyone's fucking confused. And he runs off from the retreat, because obviously it's a man that did this. He leaves in his car that he attached little metal cans to. And his car says, like, just engaged or something. Whatever. if that happened to you the first time you were ever at work and they're filming for a documentary, you're telling me that you wouldn't have gotten to the confessional room that night and been like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? Like, sorry, I think I just witnessed sexual harassment in the workplace on day two of being here. This is crazy. What the fuck are they doing at Rockin' Grandma's? I would have been in that confessional room talking smack. Meanwhile, Anthony's over here, like, helping him pack his bags and calling him on the Zoom, like, come on, dude, just come back to the company retreat. We're a family. We want to have you here. No shot, brother. Also, I'd have to be shot dead before I call a, like, corporate office a family. You know, like, I just would have to be a corpse that they are standing up with rods and puppeteering in order to say that. You know, I just think I would probably be a little bit of a bitch on jury duty. Now, I love bitches. That's the thing. I love bitches. And at the end of the day, I feel like a bitch on jury duty would serve us all well. And it just feels more realistic to me. Because when people are crazy, you're telling me you're not going into the confessional and using it as your opportunity to talk smack. I have wanted to be called into a confessional my whole life so that I could talk smack. I think I'd be very good at it. That's why I have a podcast. This is my confessional. I haven't been cast on a reality TV show yet, by the way. Might I remind you all, I was voted most likely to be on a reality TV show in high school. It was our version of Most Likely to Be Famous. So, podcast, halfway there. Halfway there. Confessionals, to me, always feel like an approved place to talk smack. Because it's essentially just for entertainment. You're entertaining the masses. You're doing a confessional interview. It's comedy. Like, I just feel like anything kind of goes. I don't know. I just feel like the cameras start rolling and I'd be like, tap right in. We're joking. We're laughing. We're bullying my weird fucking coworkers. Of course I am. Because he's a temp also. So it's not like it's even going to matter when the documentary comes out and all these people see that he was shit talking them. I would have absolutely been shit talking them. Get a bitch on jury duty. Where are the bitches at? Get them on jury duty. And if I hear anyone complain about the fact that there's a bitch on jury duty, I'm going to lose it. We need more bitches in the world. I approve of bitches. Everyone should be bitchier. Why not? I love a girl with boundaries. I do. I do. Zip is joining me again for today's episode. Today's actually my last day with her. She's moving on to her next foster tomorrow, being reunited with another kitten, so she's no longer alone. And hopefully that will stop her from destroying her next foster's furniture. Okay, she's been alone for a little too long. She needs a buddy. So she's leaving me tomorrow. I'm going to go visit my grandma next week. And then by the time I get back, I think I'm going to have a new foster. And I think word on the street is that I'm going to be fostering a mom and her three babies, which is crazy because number one, I've never fostered a family before. And number two, I've never fostered four cats at once. Two has been my maximum. So I am doubling the amount of cats I'm taking care of. And it's a family, a mom and her three babies. How sweet. And they'll probably be with me for the whole month of May, and they're gonna be pretty much ready for adoption by the time I get them. So if you live in New York City and you're thinking about adopting a cat, adopt one of my fosters. Follow me on Instagram. Usually I post when they are officially up for adoption, so maybe someday one of my fosters can remain perpetually a lover girl through Lover Girls Worldwide. One of you guys adopts one of my fosters, perpetually connected through the hearts and the minds, you know. I think I mentioned this either on last week's episode or maybe it was during an intro to the Pumpcast. We talked about this briefly, but I started watching Summer House because I felt so left out of all the drama that's been going on online. I'd be like, what is with this? I log onto the internet and there's this new piece of drama and I feel like every single person on earth watches the show. And I'm like, since when did all of you watch this? Nobody told me that you guys were all watching this. And if I knew, maybe I would have. So I have been slamming this goddamn show because I want to be up to date by the time the reunion airs so that I can participate with the people and be included. I have FOMO from drama, let me be involved. So, needless to say, for the past 2 weeks now, I've been trying to watch all of Summer House. I am about to be done with season 5, so I'm doing incredible, by the way. I'm doing earth-shattering, boots-on-the-ground journalism where I, every night, 7 o'clock rolls around and I get high, sit my ass in bed, and clock the fuck in for my shift watching Summer House. But the reason why I bring this up, actually, there's a couple reasons why I bring this up. There's so much to discuss with reality TV. That's the beautiful part about it. Obviously, I'm someone who believes that. I've done Love Island recaps on the show. We've talked about Love on the Spectrum. We've talked about Love is Blind. We've talked about so many different reality shows on here. And of course, now we do the Pumpcast. I will never relate to people who aren't into reality TV. I hate, one of my pet peeves is people who just decide they hate reality TV because it's like beneath them or they think they're too cool for it. If it's not your thing and you're normal about it, whatever. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about people that are so too fucking cool and highbrow to enjoy reality TV. And I hate to say it, men are usually the people who have those opinions. They're like, I don't understand why women love reality TV. It's so lowbrow. And I'm like, wake up, America. You can talk about every topic under the sun through the lens of reality TV. That's what the Pumpcast is. We're talking about the human experience. We're talking about dating and friendship and work conflict, family conflict. We're talking about all the major pillars of life through the lens of these insane people on reality TV. It's one part entertainment and one part an emotional check-in for you to watch and analyze what these people are doing and be like, that's crazy. I wouldn't have said that. If I was in this conflict, this is what I would have done. This would be my opinion. Some of you maybe aren't opinionated enough. Maybe that's the thing. Not to encourage more people to get a podcast. I know that many people do not need to be given a microphone, but maybe they do. You know? You know, maybe we could get more people into the reality TV space, get more people feeling opinionated, and everyone would shut the hell up about reality TV being some like empty, vapid source of entertainment, which it isn't, by the way. Not that any of you guys thought that. I close my eyes to the fact that there could be people in this audience that don't like reality TV. I close my eyes to you and you close your eyes to me, okay? And we don't speak to each other about that because I can't know that about you. I don't like it. I have two things to say about Summer House right now. The first thing I want to say is, being almost done with season 5 of Summer House and knowing that when this season was airing, people really didn't like Hannah Berner and were not siding with her. And I know there's all this talk about her getting a bad edit in season 5. And obviously I have known who Hannah Berner and Paige DeSorbo were even before watching Summer House, just because of how huge their podcast Giggly Squad is. Watching season 5 now, and I'm waiting to see when the bad edit comes in, because to be honest with you, I'm Team Hannah, and I'm a little confused how anyone else could have watched season 5 and been Team Kyle. Okay, that's a little weird, don't you think? I'm like, I'm witnessing this woman be ganged up on, belittled, and routinely misunderstood because the men that live in this house don't think that women can make a joke. So they think she's being dead serious all the goddamn time. I'm not saying that she's a perfect person, but when it's Hannah Berner versus Kyle Cook, what are we talking? What are we even talking about, you guys? We're going to have to revisit that once I finish season 5 and have all of the information. But from where I sit right now, it's actually unbelievable to me to think that anybody would be mad at Hannah Berner for how she's acted. Not saying that I agree with everything she's done. I'm just saying that I don't think any of it is crazy. And Lindsay Hubbard has behaved worse than Hannah has about 500 times over. So I'm confused. I'm confused, and we'll come back to that. But here's another example of reality TV being like a vessel for so many different kinds of reflections and moments of introspection, I'm watching Summer House, and it triggered a point of reflection on my grief for me, which is like, these people who hate reality TV, they couldn't possibly see that coming. I'm watching Summer House, a silly reality show about these people that rent a house in the fucking Hamptons for the summer. And here I am watching this stupid, vapid little show, as those people like to see it. And it's triggering a reflection for me in my grief. This actually came about, I think it was like season 3 that I was watching when I was thinking this. But in one of the episodes of Summer House, Hannah's boyfriend or flirtationship that she had one summer bought her a gift, and it was a picture of her and her cat as a clock. Kind of a corny gift, but very sweet, because clearly Hannah cares a lot about this cat. The thing about me is that, like, I love cute, thoughtful gifts, but also I have style, you know? There's like a certain standard to things. So that's neither here nor there. If I was Hannah, I would have said, oh, that's so sweet, thank you so much. And then I probably never would have actually hung it up. Again, that's totally fine. I appreciate the effort. We all don't have to like everything. But it was this moment in the show when Hannah was talking about how much she loved her cat, and that, like, to know her is to know her love for her cat, and that it feels like it's like her and this cat against the world. And it's just like such a central part of her identity as being you know, pet mom to this animal. And I, like, really understood her in that moment. And I'm listening to her and I'm going, oh my God, I totally get that, me too. And then I have this moment where I'm like, oh, just kidding, not me too, I guess. I mean, like, I used to be me too, and now it's so weird that it's just different. Like, I did used to feel like Mango was such a huge part of my identity, and like to be able to meet someone new and excitedly tell them about my cat Mango that I'm obsessed with. And yeah, now it's just weird. If someone asks me if I have pets, I have to say no. Being back on dating apps and having to remove the cat part from my profile, there's like these little things you don't even think about. And then you have to do it and you're like, that's weird. It's weird that now new people that meet me won't perceive this part of me. And that now when I tell people about Mango, they're going to know her through the lens of my grief, which is sometimes sad to me. So it's like, I want to be known by people, and I want the people I meet to know Mango and to understand like what a big part of my life she was and how much I miss her. But like, how weird is that feeling to be like this little precious thing used to be attached to my hip, just my little tiny best friend that I lived with. And now she's gone. And I still will have these moments where I'm like, damn. Fuck, like, she really is gone. That's crazy. And I just like can't believe it, and it sucks. God, now I'm crying. I feel like I'm at a place with my grief now, a little over seven months since she passed away, that like I think about her every day, and I'm reminded of her in small ways every day. And I feel like the like pain and the missing hasn't changed at all for me, but time keeps moving forward. And, you know, I definitely have found the thing they say about the grief not getting smaller, but life growing around the grief to be true. I definitely resonate with that perception of grief as time moves forward. But I think I really miss being known as Mango's person. And it makes me feel sad to think that new people that meet me won't see me that way. It's so silly.
But like, I don't know, watching Hannah date someone on Summer. This is literally so stupid. But it's not. It's going to be stupid to people who hate reality TV, but it's very real to me. Watching Hannah date this person on Summer House and them seeing her and her love for her cat and buying her, you know, the, taking a picture of her and the cat and blowing it up into this clock. It's such a sweet gesture. And like, this person who's dating her that really sees her and her love for this cat. And I think I just saw that and I had a moment where I just related. And then you have this moment of realizing and remembering and being like, whoa, I guess it's not like that anymore. It used to be, but new people that meet me won't.
My truth is that I'm always going to love a forbidden romance trope, and you guys know I love a spicy read, but what if the forbidden romance was also a cowboy romance? A hot, steamy, former pro bull rider with an employee that's slowly falling in love with him. If you're a fan of contemporary cowboy romances by authors like Bailey Hanna, Lila Sage, Elsie Silver, or Paisley Hope, you will absolutely love Taming of the Heart by Elliot Rose, which is a part of the Crimson Ridge series. Each book in the series reads as a standalone, but they all take place in the same remote small town, and they're all, of course, very spicy. Taming of the Heart is super spicy. It has very explicit sexual imagery and language throughout, which obviously is exactly what I signed up for. And it basically just drops you right into what it would be like to be hired by a ranch for the summer, except your boss is unreasonably hot. Literally looks like every fantasy and daydream you've ever had come to life. Oh, and he's already accidentally seen your favorite toy. Okay. You're the eldest daughter. You lock your heart away safely out of sight, but then boom, a former pro bull rider, much older than you, with a mustache, might I add, that makes you weak at the knees, shows up. He's the whole package. And he's luring you in with glimpses of what it might be like to let your guard down for the first time in your entire life. I know you guys are going to love it. I've been sucked in from the moment I picked it up. You can find Taming of the Heart by Elliot Rose wherever books are sold, in print and in ebook. And you can learn more by checking out Kensington Publishing at kensingtonbooks.com.
See me as Mango's mom. And it's not because I'm not. It's just that it's not a major part of my day-to-day anymore. And that's weird. And I miss her so much. And I think about her every day. But my sister told me something the other day that made me really happy. I love hearing little stories from people in my life that feel like they've seen her, get a sign from her or something. I love when I have those moments myself. But my sister said that she met a cat recently who looked just like Mango. And she was like, whoa, this cat could literally be Mango's twin. And then when she figured out what the cat's name was, she was like, holy fuck. Because the cat's name was Pancake. Now, to somebody walking down the street, you're hearing what I'm saying right now thinking, I don't know what the fuck she's talking about. What do pancakes have to do with Mango? But what you don't realize is that I'm Pancake. My nickname, my sister and I call each other by our Toontown names. So she's Dinky and I'm Pancake. So the fact that Morgan saw this cat looks just like Mango, and then she learns that the cat's name is Pancake, she's like, oh my God, that's crazy. It's like Maddie and Mango. And I think hearing stories like that from people that I love that knew me when I was Mango's mom in the present sense makes me feel very comforted. But it's fascinating how, you know, a fine piece of television worthy of Emmys, Summer House by Bravo, could trigger a moment like this. Here we go. We're talking about Summer House and then I'm crying. Who'd have thunk? Me, I thunk.
Hey.
So Coachella was this past weekend. Is everyone so sick of hearing about this? Because I kind of am. And I'm pretty sure I said this last year. And I am going to say it again this year. And it's that Coachella seems so miserable. I actually don't get the Coachella envy at all. I've been to music festivals before. I like music festivals. If I wanted to go to a music festival, I would sooner just go to Gov Ball in New York or Lollapalooza in Chicago. To go all the way to California in the middle of nowhere, no offense to people who live in Coachella Valley, but it's essentially the middle of nowhere. It takes you several hours to get into the festival, several hours to get out of the festival. You see the like bird's eye view of these festivals nowadays. They oversell this shit by so much. You can barely move. You like the amount of people walking around. I feel stressed out looking at people's photos and videos. The amount of people that are around at all times. I'm like, God, get away from me. And I'm just here in my bed on my phone. I'm like, I feel fucking claustrophobic looking at these videos. Stop walking so close to me. And by me, I mean the lens of this person I'm seeing it through on social media. Oh my God. It just seems so overwhelming. And the fact that it's, you're experiencing all of that while overheating and breathing in dust. Like, I just think it would be an overstimulation fucking nightmare. Fucking nightmare. The people who endure all of that and they do the camping part of Coachella, they don't like get a hotel or Airbnb. They're fully out here camping. Like, I think that those people deserve medals of honor or something. I would trust them with my life. If it was the end of the world and I needed to pick one person to take with me into my fucking survival bunker that I thought could take me to the end, because God knows I'm not making it on my own, I would pick somebody who camps at Coachella. Because what the hell do you mean? I would be bugging the fuck out. You mean to tell me that you bitches were waiting 8 hours in line for like a shower? You walk home to camp every night and all your shit's just blown around the whole fucking place. Then you're going to breathe in dust all night long and then wake up in the morning and go, you know what I want to do today? Breathe in more dust. And you're going to wake up and you're going to wait another 8 hours to go to the bathroom. You're going to be in line for a porta potty. Everyone's thrown up all over it, by the way. Stronger than the troops. Then after you've finally made it out of the campsite alive, you're going to venture your way back into the festival grounds. Going to take you 2 hours to get in. Good luck and Godspeed. Then you're going to wait in line again. It's the waiting in line festival. You're going to wait in line for food and beverages. And then you're going to be in a crowd full of people all day long. And even walking around, you're going to feel like you are just on top of everyone all the time, always. And then you're going to overheat and sweat your balls off and try not to have a panic attack before the headliner comes on. Can you do it? If you can, you're coming with me to the bunker, okay? Because I trust that you could survive in any conditions if you are not only surviving, but enjoying those ones. I can't imagine it. I just think the whole thing sounds miserable. I love the idea of a music festival. Coachella, specifically, sounds horrible. Now listen. In my head, the only way the Coachella becomes appealing is if someone like Lady Gaga is headlining. Like last year when Gaga was headlining, if an opportunity came about for me to see Gaga do Mayhem in the Desert, I absolutely would have gone 100%. But make no mistake, that situation would have been me enduring Coachella for Lady Gaga. That's what that would be. I just feel like it seems like a high level sport that I don't know that I'm qualified for. Maybe I'm just being a hater. Okay, fine. Can a girl not be a bitch? I thought we went over this already. Additionally, I find the amount of brand activations that happen at events like Coachella to be so fascinating. And the gifting suites are so bizarre to me. I was invited to a gifting suite once, and honestly, I felt so fucking weird the whole time I was there. Like, it just feels wrong. There's like some level of gifting that feels appropriate, like, oh, this brand that I'm interested in that maybe wants to work with me or start developing a relationship with me wants to send me a couple of products, assuming that I am interested in them. Awesome. I'm not someone who accepts a lot of gifting. A lot of brands will email wanting to send stuff. I don't accept it unless I actually want it, mostly because I live in a fucking apartment and I don't have anywhere to put shit that I don't actually want. So I don't need anybody mailing me shit randomly or without warning. One time there was a brand that kept sending me toothpaste. I don't know how they got my information or why they thought I needed 18 bottles of toothpaste, but I was pissed. I was actually pissed. When people have so much PR that it like takes up an entire room, I'm like, aren't you stressed out? Are you stressed out? I'm like, all that shit's expiring. You have to donate it, give it to friends like pretty much immediately. It's not like you can just put it on the shelf and wait for yourself to need it to infinity. Don't give it to me. I'm one girl. I don't need it. But point being, a lot of gifting I can understand because it's just relationship building. They want to send me products that I'm also interested or want to try. I accept it. I try it. Cool. But I was invited to a gifting suite once, and it was basically like they shut down a store for a bunch of influencers and invited us in, gave us free cocktails. There was a DJ, and they were like, take whatever you want. You don't have to pay for any of it. All the clothes in the store are free for you to take. And I remember walking in just being like, this is so bizarre. And I was also off put by the fact that it was like, brands don't just do that. You know what I mean? Like, the only reason they can do that is because their shit is made of fucking tissue paper and it's gonna disintegrate after one wear and it costs them like 30 cents to make. That's why they're able to do that. I just felt icky about it. So I literally went home with nothing. I just sort of moseyed around the store to kill time and tried to mind my own business because I don't want to yuck someone else's yum. If other people are excited to do that, cool. But I think the whole thing just makes me feel a little weird. The event of it all, the like closing the store so influencers can go shop by themselves, except it's all for free. I'm like, I don't like the like separation and othering and like trying to make it feel like it's so important. It's strange. I also don't need free shit just for the fuck of it. If we're not like building a relationship and I don't want to work with you as a brand, then I don't know why you need to give me free things. And to be honest with you, I never would have worn a damn thing from Pretty Little Thing, so it wouldn't have been interesting to me regardless, because I'm just not interested in wearing clothes that are made like that and that look like that. No offense, except offense. Actually offense. Bitch hours. Everyone clock in. So I don't know. When I see all these brand activations at Coachella, it's like some of them make a lot of sense. Like to see Neutrogena, those make sense to me because it's like, okay, sunscreen, skincare, protecting yourself in the desert. That makes a lot of sense. Sure, let's give out free sunscreen samples to people, to everybody, not just influencers. Like if you're going to give out free shit, give out free shit to everybody. But you know, when these brands have huge gifting suites at Coachella, where it's like the influencer Olympics, every single influencer is there and they're all walking out with like a whole new suitcase of free shit. I'm like, does anyone feel weird about this? Is it just me that feels so weird about this? But I think maybe some people like feeling like they are different and above the general admission crowd. They're the VIPs. They should get special treatment. But I think there's a normal amount of gifting related with this job that's not like totally overdoing it. And I feel like the gifting suites where they're like, take whatever you want, leave with a whole suitcase full of new shit. I'm like, surely that's overdoing it, right? No? And listen, I've been to many influencer events over the years. Some of them are awesome. Some of them are not awesome. But I think the industry as a whole has a lot of reflection to do in terms of overconsumption, brands just forcing product into creators' hands, and creators accepting the product, just accepting every single bit of gifting that comes their way with no second thought. Again, these people must not live in apartments. I don't know where the fuck you'd put all that. Like, not only do I not know where I'd put all that, I also don't want to deal with it. I don't want to deal with having to figure out where I'd put all that. Like, I don't even want to deal with having to donate it or mail it out to people. I just don't want it. Don't give it to me. Unless it's something that I genuinely want to try or need a refill on or whatever it is. Like, don't send me random shit. And I think if you're going to give out free samples at a place like Coachella, you should offer those experiences to the general public as well. Sending influencers home with like suitcases full of product is just insane to me. Nobody needs all that. And I need everyone to stop convincing themselves that they do. I just feel like sometimes it's taken a little too far. Anyways, those are my Coachella thoughts. Take them or leave them. Maybe I'm just being a bitch today. Who knows? All right, let's get into some of these audience submissions. As always, there is a submission box for the show where you guys can submit anything and everything that's been on your minds. And me and my foster kitten will try to give you a solution to your problems, some perspective, some advice. Or really, I'll give you the advice and she will destroy furniture behind me while I do it. Okay? Okay, let's get into it. Hi, Maddie. My boyfriend and I have been together for 2.5 years and we're planning on getting engaged soon. Yesterday, the topic of changing my last name after marriage came up. I let him know that I haven't decided whether to fully take his name or hyphenate my last name. I'm also considering keeping my maiden name as my professional name. I'm currently in a doctoral program and I'm working hard for my professional title. My boyfriend was completely shocked by my response and told me that it's very important to him that I take his last name because it's tradition. This felt like a slap in the face to me. I never thought in a million years that he would deny me the choice of whether or not to change something so integral to my identity. After talking it through, he made it clear that the choice between hyphenation or fully taking his last name was up to me, but he made his strong preference very clear. I was likely going to take his name anyway, but this whole conversation really rubbed me the wrong way. What are your thoughts about the expectation that a woman should take her husband's last name? Do you feel like the husband should have any say in this at all? I don't think there should ever be any expectation that a woman takes her husband's last name. I actually think that is so outdated and weird. I've thought it was weird my whole life, to be honest with you, mostly because I feel such a strong pull towards my name. And I always found it weird that other people didn't. Like, I remember being in high school asking my mom if she felt weird when she took my dad's last name. Like, you go your whole life knowing yourself, your identity. Me, I am Maddie Drosbeck. That is who I am. That's how I introduce myself to the world, all of my accomplishments, accolades, you know, everything that has ever been attributed to me is under this name. This is who I see myself as. That's my identity. I am Maddie Drosbeck. To then wake up one day and give away half that identity in place of a random man, not random, okay, someone I'm marrying, like to cut my identity in half for the person I'm getting married to. I've never understood that. And maybe I would feel differently if my achievements weren't like so intensely and importantly associated with my name. But I understand why you might also feel that connection to your name as someone pursuing a doctoral program. Like, truly, I think to me, I have no interest in ever taking someone's last name. I want to be Maddie Drosbeck until the day I die, because that's who I am. I don't want to be someone else. I want to be me. I don't want to be someone's wife. I want to be Maddie Drosbeck. Well, how come he never thought of taking my last name? You don't want to be a Drosbeck? Boo, loser. I'm like, maybe if we're talking about, I think it's the expectation that pisses me off, because it's like, okay, why don't we just take the one who has a cooler last name? Or if your wife is more accomplished, why don't you take her last name? Okay. We need to take the cooler name, take the more accomplished name, whatever. I don't like the assumption that you should take your husband's last name. I understand why having the same last name as your spouse is appealing to some people, particularly if you're having kids and you want your kids to have the same last name and whatever for other people to figure out. Fine. I'm not like judging people who take their partner's last name. It's the expectation that I'm judging. I don't like the expectation that women change their names and slice their identities in half when they get married, and that's just something you're supposed to do and you're supposed to want that, and you know, no second thought or question about it because it's tradition. Why is it tradition? Aren't we in the habit of questioning these things by now? Like, it's 2026. Can you believe it? Remember when we used to be like, guys, how are we talking about this in the year of our Lord 2012? Now it's 2026. Crazy. We're going to keep saying that until the day we die, though, because with time, we know more. We have different perspectives. We can question things. I think that at this point, we should be in a habit of questioning traditions. And if the reason why we're doing something is just because it's tradition, I don't think that's a good enough reason to do something. I think that we should be doing things because we want to do them and they feel right to us, and not just because there's this, I don't know, longstanding expectation that we do it. Like, I would jump to assume that most of the time, if you asked a man, if you asked your future husband, if he's going to change his last name to your last name, a lot of them would probably have this reaction of like, no, of course not. That, like, that's not me. That's not who I am. My identity is, you know, my name. My identity is Maddie Droswick. My identity is, you know, my family's name. So it's like, I think they understand the pull towards your own name. But for whatever reason, they just think that women should do away with that pull, which I don't really like. I don't like the expectation. I don't like the, like, major gender differences and how people handle having a connection to your own identity. I think it's strange that women are just expected to ignore the connection they have to the name they've had their whole lives. I don't think husbands should have any fucking say in this whatsoever. I think however you want to go about it, if you want to take your husband's last name, if you want to hyphen it, if you want to keep your last name, whatever you want to do, I truly feel like is entirely up to you. I think it would actually be absurd for the husband to have a say. It's your name. It literally doesn't impact him at all. It does not impact him whatsoever. It's your name. It's your life. It's how you will be addressed. It's how all of your shit will be remembered from this point forward. So I just think that it's entirely up to you. Yeah, there's no world where I think the expectation should exist like that. And there's no world where I think that the husband has any say over what you choose to do. I don't know. For me, I'm just like, I can't imagine my life, my story, my achievements, my accolades, my everything being attributed to a different name. It's still me, right? If I, let's say I marry Joseph Smith. So shout out to the Mormons. Yeah. Ooh. I marry Joseph Smith. Who the fuck is Maddie Smith? Like, who the fuck is that? Because it's not me. I don't know who that is. I've never met her before. I hope to never meet her. You know what I mean? And like, what if I get divorced from Joseph Smith? And then I spent 10 years of my life, you know, successful and growing and, you know, collecting accolades under Maddie Smith. And then I get divorced and it's like, boof, she's gone. I killed her. Back to Maddie Droswick again. And those 10 years of my life are just like, who was I in those 10 years? Someone else entirely? If I don't know. I just don't like it. I think stuff like that makes me feel so fucking weird. I'm Maddie Droswick. I've always been Maddie Droswick. I always will be Maddie Droswick. Nobody needs to like brand my name with theirs to mark me as theirs or whatever. And I would hope that the person I'm with wants me to do whatever I want to do. Because I almost like the entitlement to it is what makes me feel weird. So anyways, totally understand why I rubbed you the wrong way. And I think that you should just do whatever it is that you want to do. And I'm happy that you and your fiance were able to sort of talk through that and get to a place where he is happy for you to make that choice. Fuck his strong preference, by the way. Who cares what his strong preference is? You should do whatever you want to do, whatever feels right to you. Hi, Maddie. I hope this doesn't come off as rude. It doesn't, by the way, just to be clear before I get into this. I'm curious what you think casual sex is. I watched episode 152 of the pod when it came out, but I haven't been able to stop thinking about what you said. You mentioned that you no longer have casual sex, understandable, and are only intimate with those that you trust if you choose to be intimate with anyone at all. I guess what made me curious was when you said that you were cool with having sex with people you trust while not being exclusive. My first thought was, isn't that still casual sex? I always hated hookup culture and the blasé, almost disrespectful attitude that comes with it, and how some people treat it like a truck spot, a truck stop, a come and go, if you will, and wanted to only share myself with those I would trust, like you. But I still viewed that as casual because I wouldn't be exclusive to just them, just not engaging in hookup culture and humping anyone and everyone I see. I hope I'm explaining this well. You'd still go on dates with different people getting to know them, right? Great question. Happy to clarify sort of my perspective on it and what I mean when I say that. I think with these things, a lot of people have different ideas of what counts or what doesn't count to them. With sex in general, people have very different ideas of what everything means, what counts, what doesn't count, yada, yada. For me, I view casual sex as being very non-emotional and transactional. When I think about like my sexual experiences with people I had been going on dates with, they weren't my boyfriend or girlfriend yet, but we were in the process of going on dates and getting to know each other, and sex was a part of that getting to know each other process. There's nothing about that that was casual to me because I was emotionally invested in exploring something with them, and sex was just a part of that exploration. And we had some baseline relationship, may it have been a friendship, flirtationship, whatever it is. I trusted them, they trusted me. We did have an emotional connection with each other as well that allowed there to be more trust and ease and safety, aftercare, all those things. There was nothing casual about those dynamics to me, despite the fact that we were not exclusively committed to each other yet. Casual sex to me is the very non-emotional, transactional, hookup culture type shit that you see all the time. One night stands fall into this category. When I was in college and I used to have like routine hookups with these random people on the apps where we would basically only meet up to hook up. We wouldn't really connect. And it was all very emotionless and transactional. That is what I'm referencing when I talk about not doing casual sex. To me, casual is non-emotional and transactional. The sex that I'm having is always going to be emotional. I'm an emotional person. Sex is an emotional thing for me. It always has been. It always will be. I'm not interested in having sex with people who don't respect me and deeply care about me and are not afraid of having deeper conversations of me when we're in bed together. Like the idea of having a deeper conversation with someone that I'm having casual sex with, if I tried to have a deeper conversation with any of the people that I was having casual sex with when I was in college, they would have been like, Jesus fucking Christ, what are you, this is too much, can you just go home? Like there was no care or support or any of that there. It's a complete lack of that. That's what I'm referencing. To me, uncommitted sex is different than casual sex. Me having sex with someone that I am getting to know and am also emotionally investing in at the same time is different than someone that I have no emotional investment with and am exclusively just fucking. The relationship is 100% sexual and nothing else. That's the difference for me. It's not so much about being entirely exclusive, and it's either like you're having relationship sex or you're having casual sex. To me, there's more of like a spectrum there. And yeah, I guess when I talk about it, I'm referring to non-emotional transactional sex as being casual sex. I would still absolutely and do absolutely have sex with people that I am not in a relationship with, but they are people that I have other kinds of emotional relationships with. We are in the process of dating each other. They're a friend, yada, yada, whatever. To me, that's not casual because I have a deep emotional investment of some kind. I think this probably also connects to like the way I see the like relationship hierarchy and the like types of relationships you can have in this lifetime. I don't see it as like I'm in a relationship, so I'm having relationship sex. And if I'm not in a relationship, everything is casual. I don't think that you need to be in a relationship for something to be not casual. I actually vehemently oppose the idea that uncommitted sex is casual sex. I feel like I've gone on so many rants on this show about how I think that people are like way too about sex. I went on one recently about how sex will never be casual to me ever again because of the fact that I've dealt with sexual trauma, and also just like the very act of being a woman and having to deal with pregnancy and, you know, the state of abortion laws in this country and all of these things. Like, there's nothing about sex that is casual to me. Sex is an inherently emotional thing, be it for me on like an individual level, because that's how I react to it. And because like politically, sex is an emotional thing. And it's just more complicated than that. I've gone on rants like that on this show before, 100%. But that's not me saying that everyone needs to be in a relationship in order to have sex. That feels really, that feels way far in the opposite direction, to be honest with you. I see it as a spectrum, and there are lots of different kinds of relationships we can have in this lifetime that are incredibly emotional and invested without being like a boyfriend or a girlfriend. You know what I mean? I just think there's other kinds of high levels of emotional investment you can have with people that would make it not casual. Like, in the times I fucked my friends in the past, it wasn't casual when I did that either. Like, I love them. They are my friend. And I'm having sex with them. That's not casual. But we can have an agreement of what it is or what it isn't. But to me, it's not casual because I care about them so much. And if we were laying in bed one night and one of my friends confessed their, you know, deep dying love for me, I would be like, okay, let's talk about this. Maybe we should explore it. You know, like, I would never shut that down, ever. It's not casual. That's how I see it. I'm going to throw us on over to the Patreon post show. If you'd like to continue chit-chatting with us, come join us over on the Patreon. We have the best silly little time over there, and it is the easiest and most direct way to support the kind of content that I am making on the internet. So if you'd like to support the show and get some more content in the process, join us over on the Patreon. Be sure to follow the podcast at Emotionally Online Pod and follow me at Maddie Drosbeck on Instagram, TikTok, and of course over on my YouTube channel. I love you guys so much, and I will see you in next week's episode. Goodbye.
Okay, it's your turn. Truth or dare?